Thanks for downloading this episode of the Simcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching for the Simcast wherever they get their podcasts. The Simcast on RS1.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Simcast. I'm Matt Hunter. I nearly forgot what show I was doing. That's a terrible, terrible start to the Fez when you only do one radio show. It's the second Team UK show, and I've got an actual expert alongside me today. This is going to be quite cool. Alongside me is Peter Mackay of, well, Radio Show Limited fame, and RaceSpot fame as well. Hello, Peter.
Hello, Matt. Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, hopefully a lot of our listeners will be very used to your voice after the last couple of weekends of virtual and real world endurance racing. You've had quite a fun last few weeks, really.
Certainly have. Yeah, it's been a double Daytona double over the last couple of weeks. We had the iRacing 24 Hours of Daytona, I think it was 3 weeks ago now, and then a fortnight ago we had the Rolex 24 at Daytona, and I had the, I believe, unique privilege of commentating on both, which was very cool, and both were triumphs in their own right. I mean, you look at the participation, particularly in the iRacing Daytona 24 Hour, 16,500 drivers, over 4,000 teams, and 85 races going on at once. Quite a celebration of participation in motorsport, I would say. That was certainly what stood out to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, and it's good. It's good to see that iRacing's been able to embrace is probably the better word to use. The new GTP class straight from the off with the BMW in there, which obviously, perhaps unsurprisingly, very, very popular.
Yeah, that's a huge plus for iRacing fans to get to try the very latest generation of a sports racing prototype. I cannot remember the last time when that's been the case on iRacing, or maybe indeed on any other platform as well. But to get your hands on a car actually ahead of its outdoor competition debut was quite remarkable. A huge amount of people choosing to race that car. You just looked at our team Porsche Sport. We ran in the GT class for the iRacing Daytona 24 Hour, and it was quite interesting. If you looked at the I ratings of those in the prototypes, were quite a lot lower than ours, which means that the actual participation for the prototypes must have been quite a lot more. So it's good to see that people are giving that a go, and it's hybrid powertrain, but it's not complicated to set up either. It's not complicated to use. It kind of looks after itself. So it's great to see, and big props to BMW because they've got to kind of open the curtain a little bit. There's a lot of uncertainties about these cars, and you have to reveal a little bit and show your hand a little bit to allow the car to be scanned in such detail like they have at iRacing. So I think that's a big plus from BMW, and the ball's in the court of all the other both GTP and hypercar manufacturers to come and join the party.
100%. And I think there's pretty strong rumours that the Porsche is at least going to make an appearance at some point. Hopefully sooner rather than later. That'll be, because I mean we'll get onto the real race shortly, but my goodness, that's a good looking beast.
It is. It's a beautiful car. Yeah, very nice. It's quite different when you get up close to it compared to, say, the Acura. And I wonder if that's maybe to do with the purpose of each car. You know, the Acura at this stage is, aimed at racing in North America. Yeah. There isn't any confirmed plan as yet, publicly anyway, to take the car beyond that. Of course, Michael Andretti, Wayne Taylor, and I'm sure Mike Shank also, but Wayne Taylor and Michael Andretti were saying repeatedly over the weekend that they do want to go to Le Mans eventually, and they would like to be in the World Endurance Championship. However, when you look at the Porsche, it's a much more, I'd say it's a much more streamlined car. It's a much more slippery looking car. It's a lot less fussy in its aerodynamics, whereas the Acura is a lot more kind of angular and aggressive, and has more
it's more era
work. Yeah, it's an Acura. It's that they've always had that style. You know, 15 years ago with the very first Acura sports cars, it was the same thing. Sports prototypes, anyway. So it's very aggressive looking at the front, and does appear that it's more set up towards the circuits in the United States. But that's just from a layman's looking at it. But you're right, the 963 looks of it. It's a very elegant car, and at the back you've got that traditional Porsche, well, now kind of characteristic Porsche light bar, the rear light bar with the Porsche logo in the middle. That's really cool, because obviously the fronts of the cars have been styled, but it's now the backs of the cars are being styled nicely too, which is great.
I think that kind of, for me, that sort of started to arrive when, I think it must have, probably correct me, which is absolutely fine, I want to say probably the R15 TDI that had the LED lights in the rear wing M plates first. I remember it that far back that it was certainly one of the Audis that first had those kind of LED, making use of the wing end plates as additional lights, and it just added an extra, like I say, the extra style features. And I love how these new cars are bringing the proper recognizable stylings to them. I mean, I know some people are a little bit like, wow, they've taken the BMW grill to meme, proper meme territory. But the more I see it, and particularly in the M Sport livery that they were running at Daytona, it really worked. It just looked absolutely chef's kiss,
Oh, I think so. Yeah, I think it's definitely a BMW, and that's the whole idea of the GTP regulations, or LMDH as it's known globally. It's given the manufacturers a great opportunity to put their stamp on the cars and to give them a recognizable feature, because with a sports prototype, that's difficult to do, because of course the keys in the word, they're a prototype. They're not like, it's not like the, you know, the GT3R, which is based on a Porsche 911, a car which is easily recognizable on the street. With the prototype, it's a bit different, where it's a lot more difficult to give yourself the brand identity, and that's why some brands tend not to engage in it. But a lot of brands who maybe wouldn't have get engaged in the past are. I mean, it's been 20 years since BMW have had a sports prototype in the top class.
Part of me is a little gutted. I'm not going to Le Mans this year. I won't lie. however, I think the 24 in 24 sounds just a little cooler to me. So I'm keeping everything crossed that Lambo pitch up with theirs for that. So and we'll have some numbers for Le Mans 2024. We're going to flip flop between, dear listener, we are going to flip flop between virtual and real, because when you're talking about an event as awesome as Daytona, it's hard not to. As a commentator. What, and obviously, the people who listen to Radio Show Limited will be, virtually and in real life will have heard John do commentary on both types. But it's a question I've also never got around to asking him. So I'm really glad that you're here, because I can ask you, what would you say are the sort of challenges of commentating on virtual and real, and I suppose, considering we're talking about Daytona, for the same race, a great comparator.
That's an excellent question, Matt. I think one of the things that makes the outdoor version, if we call it that, a little bit easier in some ways, is that you can't help but be completely intoxicated by the atmosphere. Daytona International Speedway, just every morning when you walk into the circuit, it is a remarkable facility. The paddock is completely open, and this is why I would recommend anyone to go to the Rolex 24 at Daytona, because the paddock is totally open. You can go into garages, you can look at the cars, you can get really close to them, you're very likely to bump into drivers all the time. They're walking around all the time and are happy to take photographs and sign autographs, etc. So the whole place just has a huge buzz around it. So for as a commentator, your job is to, you know, tell the story of the race, to inform and to entertain. But I always find it's easier to be entertaining when you're really thoroughly excited yourself. Mm-hmm. In terms of the virtual one, the competition level is as high. I mean, the top level of virtual motorsport is quite incredible. And I always marvel at the sheer consistency of the top virtual racing drivers. They just astound me. So there you have to motivate your excitement in a different way. You have to build the excitement in a different way. And that could be coming from looking at how close the lap times are between from car to car, and engaging with the chat. That's one thing where with commentating on virtual racing, you do have a little bit more engagement with what the viewers feel in real time. Of course, yeah. There are outdoor races that are done on YouTube as well, but it can actually tend to get too busy where it's not worth kind of looking at, because there's just so much traffic on it. Whereas with the virtual, you do definitely have the ability to react and to use that as material for the show. So it is interesting. And also one of the challenges of the virtual world is that we're so much earlier in the overall life cycle of it compared to the outdoor racing. And the drivers, you know, if you look at somebody like Andy Lally, he's won the race 5 times. He's got 5 Rolex winners watches, and he nearly had 6, very nearly won the race in the GTD category. But, you know, so you've got a lot of drivers in the outdoor version where they've got a lot of story to tell. There's a lot more information about the driver. So for a commentator, when you're preparing, you've got lots more material that you can theoretically use in the actual broadcast. So that would be the main thing, is that the virtual one, you are a little bit more distant. You're doing it from home. So you have to really get delved into the... Actually, more of the sporting aspect of it is in the virtual sense.
You made a very good point, and actually, it's something that my other fellow co-host, Mr. Don Armand, commented on the other week, which this is going to sound really condescending, which is really impressive because he's never watched an endurance race ever before. I'm going to make him watch some. With real motorsport, exactly as you said, you know, you can expand on the drivers, what they've been up to before, this, that, and the other. Do you think it's something that potentially will come where we start to do that more with, you know, as sim racing hopefully continues to grow and develop and these series get, you know, more and more renowned? Do you think it's something that hopefully will develop where we can sort of, like, start telling the stories of these personalities that keep coming back year on year?
I think there's certainly a potential to do so, but it won't happen by accident. Mm-hmm. I firmly believe. I do think there's got to be a big effort from the virtual motorsport teams and the virtual motorsport organisations to really showcase the character and the stories behind the drivers who are taking part, and that requires a concerted effort and a kind of proper PR. Set up. If you look at all the outdoor racing teams, they've all got PR who are setting up, appearances, interviews, engaging with the press. You know, you look. There's very, very little now that COVID is over compared to what it was like when we were in lockdown. You know, the mainstream motorsport press don't really pick up virtual motorsport, but they're not having it. They're not having it. They're not having it presented by PR. Yeah. Whereas you will get more material come the way of press outlets and media outlets through PR. Now, the virtual world is a lot more engaged with the more new media, you know, things like Twitch, for example. There's a lot of real world series that would love to have the engagement. And the access into that very, very fertile area, and that's something where gaming in general has a huge step ahead, and esports has a huge step ahead of the real world. So there is ways for it. What I would say is it's definitely not going to happen by accident, and there are, you know, virtual motorsport also needs to handle crisis a bit better. There's been I don't really need to give a specific example. There's been plenty of examples over the course of the last 12 months, and the amount of negativity that surrounds that really hurts. And I think a lot of people on one hand will say they want the best for virtual motorsport, and we all do, because it's great, and it's a great way to access racing for people who couldn't otherwise. But you can't say that you want the best for it, but then also complain about it all the time.
100%.
I think that's the attitude switch that needs to happen. How that's going to happen, I really don't know, but there's certainly the potential for it to do so, I would say.
It was interesting because I think some of the comments that came post Le Mans Virtual and post Daytona from real world competitors actually was circled around, why does virtual have to be so interlinked with real world events? And I sort of thought about this. I thought, well, you know, when I was running Toro, we kind of did a bit of a mix, you know, because I think it's fair to say that a lot of people who participate in sim racing do, you know, the sim racing equivalent of real world series do so because either A, they love that series and want to enjoy it more so than just watching it on telly or going trackside, or they're frustrated like me. You're a frustrated racing driver. You have never got the money to actually do it, and you're never going to ever compete in a prototype in real life.
Yeah, I personally think, you know, the closer they can get them together, the better. I'm definitely in that camp, to be honest, because, you know, why have we always, you know, my first racing game was Toka Touring Cars, the first one.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That was the first game I ever got for my PlayStation. And why did I get that game? Because I was a mad British touring car fan. And
I knew I liked you.
Yeah, the year after, I got Colin McRae Rally for my Christmas, and again, you know, Colin McRae was Superman to me, you mm-hmm. know, when I was a kid. So, and I just wanted to be Colin McRae. I could at least live out that kind of fantasy, if you like, in the world of virtual, racing games, as we called them then. We refer to it in a different way now, such as the advancement in the technology. But no, I personally believe that it's a hugely positive to, you know, strike while the iron's hot. When people are talking about Daytona, give people the opportunity. I don't think it's any accident that a week before the real life 24 Hours of Daytona, we have 16,500 people taking part in a virtual version. And bearing in mind, that's just people who have iRacing.
Yeah.
You know, there might have been other versions, there might have been other examples of it on other platforms. I'm sure there would have been, just maybe not quite as high profile. But I really believe it. The more you can pair it up, the better. Whether it be the week before or the week after, I don't think it's a good idea to do it on the day of, but certainly the week before or the week after is perfect because everyone's talking about it. And it also, the amount of people from the virtual racing world who have got in touch with me after appearing on the outdoor Rolex 24 Hour at Daytona commentary is incredible. And they're, you know, we know each other from the virtual world, but we kind of talk about the real thing as well. I think the serendipity and the connection between the two is really important for both parties. You know, there's a lot to be gained for the series as well. You know, IMSA have been one of the leaders in engaging with esports, and it's been to their benefit. It really has. And, you know, who's to gain more? Well, it doesn't really matter. As long as both are gaining out of the relationship, that's good. So I would definitely support the notion of pairing up wherever there's a significant event in the outdoor world, pair up a virtual version.
And of course, I have, you know, you're absolutely right. I think IMSA have fully embraced it. I think other championships are starting to as well. In terms of brands, though, I have to say, I think the brand, in my experience, that embraced sim racing the best, the earliest, is probably Porsche. And I think, and of course, you commentate on Porsche Carrera Cup as well. another fantastic example of how manufacturers are getting involved.
Absolutely, I would put BMW in that bracket well.
Yeah.
Definitely, I think Porsche and BMW have certainly been the two most engaged, and it can come in lots of ways. It can be in opening the door to scan the cars. It can be in sponsoring competitions. You know, we have the Porsche Tag Heuer Esports Super Cup. So Porsche have obviously been hugely influential to that. It's a big prize money event. BMW, they have the BMW Sim Cup. They have the BMW Sim Live event. Just recently, you know, Porsche have announced several of what we knew as Coanda, several of their drivers as Porsche factory drivers and recognized as such. And they brought they did a nice video actually with Mark Leap where they brought the rig into the secret, or now not so secret, museum warehouse where they keep all their collections. So the rig that they use is in there. So yeah, I think that those two brands are the two that have really embraced it but they have to be looked after though. I think they have to be looked after because they're, you know, big companies like that, there has to be a value in being involved, and that value has to evolve. It can't just be the same every year. You have to evolve that relationship, and you know, you want to keep brands like that engaged, and that can, some years that can be easier than others depending on what is going on with that particular company at that particular time. So I do think that Porsche, BMW, yes, they've come into the space, but they really need to be looked after by the overall virtual racing community, which of course there's a lot of players in that space between the kind of the software, hardware, the teams, the drivers, everybody. They all have to play their part in keeping these big brands involved, because of course then that keeps the link closer to the outdoor world as well.
This might just be me, but I 100% thought when they said about the secret, not so secret Porsche Museum, I totally envisaged that warehouse from the end of Indiana Jones, but just filled with rare Porsches.
It's a pretty incredible place. Yeah, it's well, from the outside, it's absolutely not incredible. It's nondescript, but inside, goodness, yeah, it's special. Yeah, as much as any brand in the world, they really look after their heritage. They've got a full archive and museum department as well. So it's interesting. Porsche, they're looking forward, you know, with their involvement in virtual motorsport, obviously the electrification of their fleet and so on. But they also look back as well. Their heritage is everything to them as well. So they kind of balance both those aspects.
Gonna have to twist some wrists and pull in some favors if I could ever get to go over and see that place. So before we move on, Peter, what's next for you? Any more real races lined up?
Yes, it's well, actually this weekend I'm commentating on the iRacing Bathurst 12 hours. But I'm also racing in it as well. Now I will not be in the top split, that's for sure. So myself and my Porsche Sport colleagues, Ryan Parkins, who we call the King Hippo. That's a story for another day. He's actually a very good go-karter, Ryan. He's probably about half my weight, actually, but he's called King Hippo. But it's like I say, don't ask. But anyway, we're competing in that. We're going to be on the 7 o'clock in the morning slot. We'll be a little bit further down the pecking order, but that's the great thing about iRacing. You get paired up with people of a similar level, which is, I think it's a superb system. So I'm going to be doing double duty again, like I did for the virtual Daytona 24 hour, dropping in to do some stints with our team and then commentating on the Bathurst 12 hour, which I'm looking forward to. I'm at Knockhill, the start of the Knockhill season next week. I'm off to the Grant Construction Rally, which I'm very excited about to kick off the season at my home track. And then at the beginning of March, I'm off to the first round of the European Rally Championship to work at the stage ends there. So yeah, the next few weeks is reasonably busy actually. Yeah, Oh, and one that I must remember, another driving engagement on the 28th of February, and taking part in the Sim Racing Magazine Daytona 2.4 Hour in one of my favorite, definitely my favorite iRacing car, the HPD, the ARX 01D.
Mega.
Yes, best car on iRacing. It's a shame. Just never get the chance to race it anymore. So getting the chance to do that. So can't wait.
Very exciting. Well, Peter, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, and thanks for coming on. It's just we could talk all day about historical motorsport and stuff. I think it's going to be fantastic. Show for another time. Thank you very much, and hopefully speak soon, and very best of luck for Bathurst.
Thank you.
And now we move on to the second part of the show, where it's a little bit more quiet. And I have the most space I've had in this booth for a very, very long time. Ever, in fact. I don't think I've ever actually done a solo show. So this should be fun. Anyway, enough of that nonsense. If you want to get in touch with us, of course, head over to our Twitter at Simcast Radio. I'm pretty sure it's the same on Instagram as well, actually. Really probably should check that. Using the hashtag SimcastRSL. You can also, of course, head over to the Radio Show Listeners Collective on Facebook and talk about esports over there. And funnily enough, there has been a few esports conversations over there of late. Maybe Le Mans Virtual related, possibly Daytona related, but mostly Le Mans Virtual related. What a surprise. And you know what? We're not going to get back into that. We've done three shows so far in 2023. All three of them have had that involved. I think we're okay. I think we're over it. I think Sim Racing's going to survive. Although we did mention Daytona, didn't we? Literally just talked about it. Ah, well, who cares? So, yes, it's time for the news. I'm trying to do that in the least Top Gear-y way possible. I don't think we've ever actually announced it as the news before. Like, certainly not for a very long time. This is what happens when you have a co-host. You get to put up with all the voices that I have in my head as well. Anyway, so we're going to talk about a few bits of news that have occurred in the last couple of weeks. The first is that Gran Turismo champion Igor Fraga has picked up a drive in the Super GT 300 class with a newly formed Anes de Tauwe Racing with Arnage squad and Alexis RCF GT3, which I think we could all agree is a pretty meaty car. Can't actually remember what engine it's got. I assume it's a V8. I think it's a V8. Someone can correct me on that. Please do correct me, for goodness sake. This is where I miss having my wonderful co-host to correct me at every given turn, he said, rolling his eyes. Fraga's going to be sharing the car with Yugo Furutani, and Miki Koyama will be joining as the second and third drivers in that squad. The team itself is moving to the Lexus GT3 after selling its Toyota 86 chassis to Team Mack. Actually, we can all agree I mean, the 86 is a nice car. The Lexus, though, that is a very nice piece of kit. I'm not going to lie. Furutani raced in Super Formula Lights for Toms last season. And both he and Koyama have tested for Toms as well. So, interesting they're making a single-seated Super GT jump. Interesting. Be interested to understand more about that, because Super Formula is quite a thing over there, and it is a damn good car. If you get to download, I think it's RSS. Again, where's Jordan to remind me? RSS have an amazing version of that on their channel. And obviously you can race it in Gran Turismo as well. My good friend James has just been running a Devon Science version of it, for posting lots of videos of it. Epic livery, mate. Epic. So, actually, let's have a quick look at the... Let's just, out of interest, let's have a quick look and see what the lineup is. So, GT300 entries so far. The FIA... So, they have two types of classes. They have the FIA GT3 cars and what's called the mother chassis cars. Is that like cars delivered by aliens? Answers on a postcard. Answers to at Simcast RSL. Let me know why I'm spouting rubbish. So the FIA GT cars we're talking about, looking at so far, they've got 9 FIA GT3 cars and 6 mother chassis cars. Perhaps unsurprisingly, the majority of the FIA GT3 cars, or the largest number of FIA GT3 cars, are Nissan GTRs, with a grand total of 3. There is also the aforementioned Lexus RCF, a Honda NSX GT3, one M4 BMW M4 GT3, and two Mercedeses. And I'm going to say it like that, and I don't care. In the mother class, you've got the Toyota 86, a Supra, another 86, an LC... Blimey, there's an LC500 still going. Wow. Another GR Supra, and then a Subaru Buzz. Because why not? So that's cool. I'm going to be really interested to see what... Oh, if we had time, I'd so go and have a look at the Super GT entry list just to see who's in what, because I really used to quite like watching that. And they could crack the race as well. So that would be quite interesting. Anyway, so good luck to Igor Fraga on his new venture in his Lexus RCF GT3 over in Japan. I'd be interested. Do you know what? No, I'm going to have a look because I want to find out what circuits they race at. Sod it, we're going to have a look. You don't own me. I could do it. Now I'm flying solo. I could do what the earth I want. So, okay. Oh, that's right. The Super GT's got that new kick-ass Honda Civic type thing that looks amazing. That Matt Neal shared recently. That looks so cool. Anyway. So the rounds are Akiyama, so Thai Circuit Ada for people of a certain age, i.e. me. Fuji, Suzuka. I'm sensing a theme. Sugo, which is superb. I really like that track. Autopolis, which I always thought was a made-up circuit. And they close out the season at Motegi. They're racing about once a month. Is that all? Wow. Okay, so the season starts in April and ends in November. And Motegi. That'd be awesome, actually. I miss Motegi from Forza, I have to say. It's a much underrated track. So that was our little deviation for the... Just because I'm on my own doesn't mean that we can't have massive segues into other things. Anyway. Actually, just going back to the commentary thing, I do have to say, because this was quite cool. Because suffice to say, dear listener, there is no esports roundup of the week brought to you by the Gaming Athlete, because we kind of, sort of, maybe-ish, sort of, maybe, kind of talked about esports-related stuff earlier with Peter. So between you and me, we won't do much more. We're going to talk about other things. But what I will say, of course, is head on over to thegamingathlete.com to learn more about how to reach athlete status in gaming by maximizing your performance and restoring your well-being. Once again, that's thegamingathlete.com. And if you really want to get involved, head over to the Discord. And if you really, really want to get involved, then make sure to tune in at about 7:30 on a Tuesday in particular on Twitch. As he suddenly forgets what his bloody Twitch channel is. It is Don_Ju1. That's J-U-1. Close that off. There we go. Don_Ju1, where you can join in the fun over there. Which yesterday, now I did sort of mention as we were talking to Peter that Don hasn't watched any endurance racing. And it's true, he hasn't watched any endurance racing. However, for someone who hasn't watched any endurance racing, he has nailed the commentary for 2 a.m. in the morning endurance racing on the innuendo bingo card of that. There is no doubt. Because on Tuesday, because obviously it's Thursday, he was doing commentary, the first commentary I've ever known him do, on marble racing. Yes, marble racing. And it was marble racing around a racetrack. So fundamentally, he was commentating on sim racing. So there we go. Don Armand is a sim racing commentator, ladies and gentlemen. So if you need someone, if RaceSpot needs someone to stand in for a the depths of the night commentary where no one actually listens, and good God, it's probably a good idea, and you're ready the innuendo bingo card, Don's your man. Seriously, watch the stream back and see what I mean. It was really, really quite something. So Fraga's driving in Super GT. There we go. Anyway, so if, like me, you're quite into your sim racing and obviously you want to progress your sim setup from a wheel clamp on your desk and pedals scooched somewhere underneath the table in the most uncomfortable chair possible, which means every time you brake, you end up going downstairs, then you probably want to progress to some sort of frame. Now, if you're starting... Now, this doesn't necessarily mean you're full-on 80-20 aluminium alley rigs from the likes of SimLab or Track Racer or any of those that could cost anything from, you know, 400 quid, 500 quid up to the... I want to say the P1, it's not the P1X Evo, is it? Hang on, we're going to check. We're going to do the thing that I always tell Ben off for doing. We're going to do internet browsing whilst we're actually doing the radio show. But notice how I did not stop talking. The X1 Pro from SimLab, which is basically a fully integrated aluminium frame. With its own floor, basically, and stand, and wheel extender, and everything for the grand sum total of €1,700. I don't even think that comes with the seat. Oh, good God, no, it doesn't. Wow. So if you'd like to. Try and park your bum on a metal frame, it's $1,799. If you'd actually like the luxury of a seat, it's €2,149. Oh wow, if you want a Sparco Circuit 2 seat, it's €2,299. Anyway, so you can go from that. And a company in America called Monoprice, which is interesting because they've got two different products and they're two very different prices. Monoprice is an American retailer special. It sounds like what we would call the pound. It's not the pound shop, but you go in and everything should be a pound, but it's never a pound. So Monoprice, I'm going to go with, you go in there and nothing's one price. But at least it's more than a dollar. Anyway. So they specialize in electronics for home stuff, and they've decided that they too want a bit of the sim racing market, and they've produced a wheel stand A-frame type affair and a triple screen monitor mounting solution. The name of the aforementioned stand. The name of the aforementioned stand, because we can't just call it a foldable racing stand, is the Dark Matter GT Foldable Racing Stand. Firstly, if it was actually constructed from dark matter, it would pretty much pass through. I'm pretty certain it would pass through everything, which is not really what you want from a robust wheel sim racing solution. And the Dark Matter GT Triple Racing Mount. I'm confused because, I mean, you know, at least the folding racing stand kind of says what it is on the tin. If someone said to you, I would like a Dark Matter GT Triple Racing Mount, there's no screen involved in that description. So if you want to mount your GT Triple, then that's definitely what you require. So there we go. Anyway, let's talk about this, because I'm being facetious, obviously. It's a very stupid thing to do. So the A-frame, it's very similar, actually, to in sort of layout to the one I used to have, which was the GT Omega Apex stand. Insofar as what you basically have is 20 kilograms square format steel frame, which folds nice and flat, which is great for storage. You have a thinner steel plate. You have a thinner steel plate in which you can attach your pedals. Now, ideally, these are really going to kind of be things that are already located on some kind of base plate. So probably products from Logitech, Thrustmaster, and the one I was using, the Fanatec V3s would be ideal. If you're trying to utilize anything that doesn't have a pre-existing plate, you're going to need another option, I think, really, because these don't have pre-drilled. It's literally long, thin slats, so you can mount the pedal plate up or down on this much larger plate, which you can then angle forward and back depending on what sort of height range you require. I can only assume for the photos that they utilized for this, the person had 4 foot long arms and about 1 foot feet, which are 1 foot long legs, which I don't think is anybody on the known planet. I was going to make a rugby player joke, but I'm not going to, because it'll be lost on you. So sorry. So they're going up against the sort of next level racing play seat kind of thing, which is great. So as I said, I had the Apex steering frame from GT Omega, which comes in at $129.95. Obviously, there are other things you can add on to that, like keyboard mounts, etc. The Apex also comes with an add-on for a shifter plate, which is quite good, though, in my experience, because it's literally just a plate on a stick. The flex on it is quite something, so bear that in mind. The other cool thing that GT Omega did with this was to add an additional frame, like a frame extender, which basically meant that you could attach a static seat to it. So basically making a sim rig, a proper sim rig, really. You know, with a proper, you could put a Sparco chair or one of GT Omega's own cool chair designs into that. And it's all one whole integrated system then, which is, you know, absolutely what you want to do if you're a bit tight for space. So, yeah, and as I said, that comes in at $129.95. And the fact that you can fold it away when you're not using it is ideal. The only thing I will say about these sort of frames, dear listener, as someone who's utilized them extensively over the last few years, where they clearly aren't as good as a proper fixed frame is where you you want to be able to jump into the rig every single time and everything is exactly where you left it. So you don't have to adjust chairs, you don't have to adjust pedals or this, that, and the other. Unless you keep the frame in its exact same position the whole entire time, and believe me, if you have a separate chair, that ain't going to make any difference. You're going to be constantly resetting stuff to get it back exactly how you want it for every time you want a sim race. Which if you just literally want to, if you're a bit like me and you're a bit lazy, you're going to end up spending a good little amount of time setting everything back up before you even then fire up the game. And inevitably, if it's R-Factor 2, waiting for 30 hours for it to do any updates. You probably want to jump, skip this A-frame format and go straight to a proper fixed rig. Just a little bit of retail advice there for you from someone who has experienced it himself. But that being said, these frames, for people with confined space who want to have a proper experience, who don't want to just have it on the desk, this is a really good way to go. I think you could also probably, if you try, you could probably use it for a HOTUS as well, I suspect. It's probably doable. But that's the GTMag one. Anyway, so that's $129.95. They mentioned next level. Which is a interesting thing to do, because I'm sort of looking at the next level site and I was trying to work out which one it could possibly be, because they don't really have one that is sort of a separate A-frame kind of affair. They have one that's pre-connected effectively, like the GT Omega, with the extra seat frame and seat, which is, so if you added that, so as an example, so you could have £239 extra on top of the pre-existing £129. So call it 350, 60, 70. So that's £370 for round figures. Would be your Apex A frame plus the extra extending frame and a seat. Next level, the equivalent for that. Oh, you're not, you know. The equivalent for that, you're probably looking at £600. And those are on casters. So £699 for the GT track. If you just want the frame only, it's £499. What we're talking about for mono price is a lot cheaper. Which is quite interesting. So, we haven't actually sort of said about the price for the mono price one. The mono price one is the single price of $109 before taxes and shipping. So it's probably some maths more. I can't be asked to work that out. Work it out. It's fine. Just go to a shop and ask. The triple mount that they are doing comes in at $199, so $200, which is almost double the amount of... it's almost double the amount of the... of the frame itself. Fine, okay. But, you know, I'm sort of being a bit snobby here and I really shouldn't be. But if you are genuinely, if you are in the market for an A-frame solution, these sort of solid steel 20 kilogram efforts, they are genuinely a very, very, very good way of getting into sim racing before you inevitably make the jump up to something a bit more substantial. So, there we go. But yes, $109 is undercuts all the competition, really, I'd say. So that's bang on. Get on. Well done. Well done, Monoprice. And it's good to see another brand realizing that there is other competition around. So let's have a look at the next bit of news. This coming weekend, I said we weren't going to do any esports, and here we are about to do some esports. This coming weekend is the opening round of the ESL R1 series, the spring season, on Ren Sport, the new title, new GT-based title. The GT section is getting quite crowded, isn't it? But, you know, I have to say, it's a very good looking game. And the good people at Traction have compiled a list of everyone who's entered into this already. Now, I happen to know that when I first was researching this, one of the teams hadn't initially done their entry. They have now done so, which is G2 Sim Racing. I have that entry separate on a separate notepad because I'm proper when it comes to doing research. Yeah. Now let's see if I've researched how to pronounce the names. Cheeky aside, I haven't. So we'll get there anyway. So the opening round is taking place. This is the live event at the IEM Expo Katowice in Poland on the 11th, taking place on the 11th of February. So we'll just have a quick look down the list and see who we've got. So the first team, well, anyone who watched Daytona will be used to seeing Apex Racing in an Audi, because I only watched GTD at Daytona. It was Apex Racing with an Audi. The team drivers for this event will be Kevin Ellis Jr., Jamie Fluke, Peter Berryman, and Johan Haas. And that's the first of the Audis. I think Audi proving a very popular car to run in this series. I haven't seen too many clear examples of BMWs. So it's going to be interesting to see who we get. Next up is the first of the, what I'm going to call the pure esports teams, whereby some sizable esports esports entities have decided to go sim racing for a change, and I'm sure there's going to be some people going, OMG, it's whomever, and FML, no, not FML, other such young person comments about this stuff. So anyway, so FaZe Clan Sim Racing have entered. They are running, squints at the screen, Porsche. And we have one driver who we don't know about as yet. He's very shadowy in the back of the picture that the team have put up, which I love. I love the fact that these guys have posted proper pictures of who's entering. It's just, it's quite a thing. Very cool. Lucas Müller, Tim Yarshall, and Ulash Özildirim are the named drivers so far. For FaZe Clan. And then another pure esports entity. Now, dear listener, we did mention a time or so ago that it was highly likely that a lot of these esports entities who are making the move into sim racing were going to get some hired guns, shall we say. See if you notice them as we go through the list, because, well, my old co-host would go, OMG, it's such and such. I'm going to say FML again. That's not really the right thing to say. Yono, no, that's not one either. I've really got to start talking like a 38-year-old, haven't I? It's just getting a bit. I'm becoming the Steve Buscemi meme. I just know it. Anyway, so Furia have named their drivers. They have Kaique Oliveira, Felipe Baptista, Jeff Giassi. Giassi. Yeah, and Victor Veloso. G2 Sim Racing checks other notes. And there's a reason why I'm doing this and this as well. John Tormala, Robbie Stapleford, Isaac Price, Sebastian Job, I think we've heard of him before, and Eamon Murphy, who, for those who don't know, raced in and won the inaugural Tora Ginetta GT4 Super Cup back in the day for Team Momentum, and was actually at Brands Hatch where he got his trophy and kit and stuff like that. So that's quite cool. Nice to see that Eamon's doing so well for himself these days. Tora alumni, indeed. Proud face. So that's G2 Sim Racing. So he used to so Eamon, as an example, used to race at Veloce. I know he left recently, so he's moved on to G2. He's raced for some big teams in the past, F4H as well. He was a driver there for a little while. As was too, I think, James Baldwin. at one point. I'm sure someone will correct me. I look forward to hearing the notes on our chat back after this show airs, and the guys could go, oh, you didn't say that right. I don't mind it when it comes from you listeners. It's when the other people I work with do it. That's when I get annoyed. Anyway, not annoyed. Eye roll emoji. Heroic, which is another esports team, I'm going to guess. Mikkel Gade, Oscar Bixrud, Tommy Østgaard, whose name really rings a bell, and I can't think why. And Thomas Tatella. I'm not going to do a Ben. I'm not going to do it. I am going to pronounce these names to the best of my ability by actually looking at them first and not just guessing. There will be some guessing. And I apologise profusely if I get your name wrong. Mercedes, here's some names that we definitely know. Bonahuis, Graham Carroll, the aforementioned James Baldwin, who I believe we saw post that he was becoming a Mercedes AMG driver, so fantastic to see him there. And Marco Pejic, Mercedes AMG Williams Esports. Can we mention Williams Esports on the channel? Okay. Dare McCormick, Dennis Scherniger, Jakub Brzezinski, and Nikodym Wisniewski. I've mullered that one, I do apologise. Wisniewski, there we go. Hey, come on, second time's. Moose Racing, which has nothing to do with cows, I've checked. Otherwise, it'd be cows v zebras. Because our good friends at BS competition, who I completely missed for some reason. Nils Nayox, Philippe Dean, Rainer Talver, Ryan Barnefeld, team captain Bruno Spengler. The aforementioned Bruno Spengler, we mentioned this the other week, and support driver Ibrahim Khan. Epic picture, guys. Loving it. Loving your work. Anyway, back to Moose. So from zebras to cows. Not really. Max Benecker, Moritz Lerner, Patrick Hertzman, and Yuri Kastorp. Again, a lot of names there. The picture of Porsche Coanda makes it look like they've got a pair of lightsabers in the background. I've just realised that. That's really peculiar. Strange. Anyway. Strange. Porsche Coanda Esports. Dane Warren, Josh Rogers, Mac Backham, and Mitchell DeYoung. I mean, that's a powerhouse squad right there. And I'm sure I look very much forward to them finishing in second behind BS Competition. Not that I'm biased. I should have said James's team, shouldn't I? Sorry. Mercedes AMG Petronas Esports. Sorry, Porsche, you're finishing third this year. Terrible. RHG Esports with Aaron Yajovsky, Yuri Toman, Marcel Sinchich, Risto Kapit, support driver Thibaut Casabon, and Tim Ayer, and Andonovsky. Porsche, pausing for effect. And would it even be an esports series of any single kind if we didn't have Team Redline involved? It's like the AF Corsa of sim racing, with Enzo Benito, Jeffrey Reitfeld, Kevin Siggy, and Luke Bennett driving for them. And as I said earlier on, the first round takes place this weekend. You'll be able to obviously follow it all on YouTube, I imagine. Round one, the IEM Expo Katowice in Poland. Really fascinating. Personally, I think it's going to be worth tuning in, even though the Six Nations is on, just to see what Rennsport looks like. Like, really to see what it looks like outside of presser videos and a few lucky people who've managed to run a few laps, limited laps at Hockenheim. So, very much looking forward to that. Finally, in the last couple of minutes, just very quickly, Ian Bell's Straight Force Studios has launched its website, showcasing some key staff, which includes, obviously, Ian Bell, because it'd be stupid not to. It also includes Stephen Baister, the composer, who's, to be honest, if you haven't heard his stuff on Project Cars, you really need to, because the music he produced for that was just outstanding, really outstanding. AJ Weber, director of physics and simulation, coming up with a new physics engine for it all. We're also, the other one that they brought up was Henrik Roos, who was involved in the original GTR. He used to run the FIA GT Championship in around 2003 with a Viper with very, very, very subtle, I might say, GTR branding all over the car. I think it might even have been the cover car for one of the games. I forget. I don't know. It was two. It might have been GTR 3, perhaps. But absolutely, yeah. But that's really cool as well. I believe, if I recall from what I saw earlier on, he is the handling consultant. Yes, he's the handling consultant. Ben Collins is the driving consultant for the motorsport side. So that's very cool. I just really want to see some things from this now. I want to see what GTR Revival means outside of press blurb. I want to see some cars now. I want to see something that isn't just a static image. I think it's important. And I think everyone could probably, hopefully, fingers crossed, agree with me. But, yeah, so keep an eye on it. We will obviously keep an eye on what happens over at Straight 4 Studios. Because who isn't a fan of early noughties GT racing? I mean, it's what got me into sports cars, I won't lie. So I'm keeping everything crossed that actually this becomes a thing. And just finally, Mazda Racing have announced that their flagship R21 DD wheelbase is now back in stock for the slightly less eye-watering amount, although it is still reasonably eye-watering amount of $1,099 for a 21 newton meter wheel with all the bells and whistles that a cheese branded wheelbase can provide. And that, dear listener, is the show. Thanks ever so much for listening. Great to have Peter Mackay on the show earlier on, and thanks for sticking with me for the last 35 minutes of me talking to myself. Dear, oh dear. Team USA will be back next week with more fun and frolics from Lewis, Ben, and probably Taylor if the weather improves and he actually has some power back. God bless to everyone over there dealing with everything that they are, because, yeah, it doesn't sound very fun. And obviously, thoughts very much with the situation in Turkey as well at the moment. So, yeah. So I will see you in 2 weeks' time for another interesting Team UK sim racing show here at the Simcast. Team USA back next week. Come on, Wales. We've got to beat Scotland now. See you later. Bye for now.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, subscribe to the Simcast wherever you get your podcasts.